Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared creates collaboration, and collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face. Matthew DeCero is a comedian and a magician and a dear friend of mine. We've known each other for many, many years. In fact, he was guest number three. You're going to hear about that probably on the podcast. We talk about a lot of things today, but really what we're sort of having some fun with is his appearance that's coming up on the Penn & Teller show, and you're going to hear more about that and why TV is really just all about manipulation. And Matt's a little concerned that this interview was going to come across as a bit negative, but it's fun, it's insightful. It may sound a little negative, but the truth is, you know, as Matt would say, that is the reality of showbiz. And so we talk about showbiz. We talk about loving things and why, and loving what you do, not loving things, but loving what you do, and why Matt loves being on stage, everything about being on stage, and why he's got no ego left at all. He's been in show business long enough to know that that's probably the best place to land. Don't forget to check out davidpecklive.com for more podcasts. I think Matt's is the 200th podcast now. How cool is that? Sign up for our email list. Check out my book, Real Change is Incremental. Subscribe to us on iTunes, Face to Face. And we're moving into TIFF, so stay tuned. And don't move. Don't touch your dial, Matthew DeCero. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by another very special guest today that actually a returning guest.
Matthew, yeah, from early on, early days of your
maybe,
podcast.
I might have to check while we're here sitting at the... I don't even know what this place is called, the Q Restaurant. I figure I'm listening to right now to a podcast by Sam Harris and Dan Dennett, and I figure if they can record podcasts at a local bar, we can too.
So we've classed it up.
That's right. We're moving up in the podcasting and the digital world. So I think it was like podcast two, maybe. I'm going to go back and check. While you're getting into one of your long-winded answers,
yeah. I will have many long-winded answers.
I think you will, too. Yeah, I'm going to go back and check. So, Comedy Magic with Matthew DeCero. Why did you not become an architect instead, is the real question.
Well, this is the question I ask myself every single day. I should have done anything else.
Is your resume like one line, comedian?
So do you know what's funny? I have a name. This is a true story. I don't think I've told you this yet. listeners might know. I know Dave. So I have a neighbor who works at a dump.
That funny? But anyway.
Right across the street from my house. And he's like, oh, they're hiring. You should come work there. We just sit around and we watch movies and Netflix all day. I've never had a job. But I've never had an interview. So I thought I'd like to try this to get an interview. So I go, okay, set it up. So the guy... is okay with it.
Oh, so you actually went?
So I went and had an interview. My neighbor's
like... Is this your first interview ever?
Ever. I had a job in 1989 working at a movie theater.
Yep.
And that's it. So my neighbor's like, look, this guy's never had a job. He's never had an interview, but still he wants to try and get this job. So the guy asked for a resume. So I have to print up my resume is not even one paragraph long. All it is like 1989 to present, comedian, magician. And then the bullet points underneath are things like, writes jokes, goes on a plane and tells them.
That's like, hilarious.
Oh yeah, it's just it's crazy.
So what was the interview like?
It was about 10 minutes. Turns out to get a job at a dump is not a grueling interview. Not too concerned about your educational, but your CV is not.
You need to know how to tie bags. Is that pretty much it? And you need a
pair
of leather gloves.
Not even that. Not even that. He's just like, you know how to use a microphone and a walkie-talkie. And I'm like, hey, I got my ham radio license. Swear to God. Anyways, I was offered the job.
Wow. Okay.
Can you imagine that? I was offered the job, but I didn't take it.
Episode three. Sorry,
episode
man.
Three.
I was getting a little bored with your answers.
Yeah, no. Well, it wasn't a very good answer. I'm going to be drinking my Caesar.
Yes, Matt's having a Virgin Caesar. I'm having a Coke here at the Q on Queensway. We might as well put in some shameless advertising. Well, we got thrown out of Zeller's, by the way.
We tried to record in the
mattress department.
In the glassed off mattress department. Yeah. Like, hey, can we just record in here?
And they threw
We should probably edit this section out.
And you were on CBC a couple of days ago, and then we head to Zeller's. I mean, it's like
I know, I'm on a national radio show, like Canada's premier national radio show, interviewed for a long time.
Do they pad their sound booths with mattresses as well, or is that just Zeller's?
I think they pad them with taxpayers' dollars.
I think you're probably right.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what it's padded with. Yeah, the whole 10th floor is filled with cash.
So you're not going to take the job?
No. I was just really curious to see what the interview was like. And it's unlike, you know, trying to get a new agent or something like that. It was weird. I felt a little uncomfortable, but he's asking me questions. Your listeners are going to be like, we've all had 50 jobs. What are you talking about? But it was crazy.
Yeah, I think it's hilarious that your CV is one paragraph.
One paragraph. Yeah. Like, I have nothing to say. And what are my skill sets?
So comedy comes out of a desire never to work for real money,
No, there's real money in this.
Yeah, there is.
There is. You know, never had a job, but I've had as close to a normal life as any act could possibly have in this country, right? House, car, kid.
Yep.
All that stuff. The missus doesn't work.
So everybody should know that Matt and I go way back, Matthew and I go way back. We've known each other for a long time. Many of you know that I've been performing, doing magic, and so.
He had a beautiful act.
Yes, a coin act. We've worked similar stages. We've been nicknamed the whiniest people in show business. I mean, so we have some history here. It's probably going to come out in the podcast. But today, we're going to talk about comedy. We're going to talk a little bit about magic, I suppose. But Matt and I had the opportunity or pleasure, you could say, of traveling to Vegas together recently. And it's now been officially announced, I think.
Yes, totally official.
So
can say it.
Matt was on the Penn & Teller show, filmed at the Rio
in Las Vegas.
In Vegas. It was my first time in Vegas, which was kind of
weird for me to experience somebody never having been to Vegas before.
Well, it's just
strange.
It's such a gong show from a spectacle.
It's a two-day town. It's over the top. It's the world's biggest cruise ship that doesn't float.
It's a cruise ship. It's like one massive buffet.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and even the buffet in our hotel we could have probably, sat about 1,500 in there?
It was ridiculous. But that's the nature of Vegas. I love Vegas, but I only like it for a couple days. And then
we
were there for 4 days.
To film basically
a seven-minute spot. But there was, you know, there was a day where they shot an interview. There was a day where they shot B-roll, like background video for that interview. And then there was something else. And then there was the day of actually shooting the show. So it was nice, and you came down and Glenn Ottaway was there.
There was a bit of a Canadian contingent there, which was kind of neat.
Yeah, we can't say the other acts, unfortunately, because they have not been announced.
Can we say who they rhyme with?
Les and Pessa were very nice to be there.
Yes. Well, all we can say is that there was some real serious talent down there across the board, really.
Some of the best magicians in the world were represented on that show.
So I want to talk a little bit about backstage. I want to find out more about the process, because I think what's interesting, is that whole TV side of things, right? From going from kind of live theater to a corporate crowd.
And what people see on TV is nothing, even remotely, similar to what it's actually like.
So overall,
manipulation is the key to television.
Interesting. Okay, so there's the soundbite from this interview.
Yeah, that's the pull quote.
So tell me about the whole experience. I mean, good, would you say?
So, for your listeners who don't know, the show's called Fool Us. And magicians come from all over the world.
And now affectionately referred to as FU
Yes, we will refer to it as I was FU'd.
That's right.
I was FU'd. So magicians from all over the world come to Las Vegas. They're flown in and they perform in Penn & Teller's theater at the Rio Hotel. And you perform a magic trick for them and you try to fool Penn & Teller in front of their live audience. So honored to be on the show. It was nice to be asked.
Sure, of course.
And, you know, there's very few Canadians on the show.
And I sat in the audience.
Dave sat in the audience and Glenn Ottaway sat in the audience. And you know what was funny? Dave said to me, as soon as I walked off stage, you said, I was nervous for you. And I'm like, funny, because you're not up there in the back waiting to go on. Nothing to be nervous. You just got to sit and watch.
I just got to sit and watch. No, I know.
It's unlike, I've done lots of television shows and radio shows with myself and with other people. And you know what's interesting about this that's totally different is you're not allowed to hang out with the other acts. You're segregated from everybody. So,
and does that have something to do with the secrets, with the magic?
They say it has to do with, like, if I watch somebody, I have the potential, or if I interact with them, another act, I can potentially talk to them about how Penn and Teller work out things, or they figure, it's like there's a contest element to the show, right? Even though it's not really. They say
there's a contest element. Oh, I see what you mean. Right.
So they go.
And what is the prize?
It's a trophy. It says FU.
Really?
Swear to God, yeah. It comes down from the ceiling if you fool them.
And some frittella.
And yeah, like literally, that's about it. And then you're escorted out of the building.
Oh, I thought there was money and a spot on the show or something.
I think you get a chance to go back and perform for Penn and Teller if you can afford the airfare to get yourself down there kind of thing. You know?
Yeah.
Otherwise,
yeah.
You're on your own.
But overall, good experience, would you say? Or something
cripplingly
you would...
stressful.
Wow.
And again, been on lots of television before, but nothing quite like this. Matter of fact, I don't know if I ever told you this. Right before I went on stage, I was thinking, because it was nice to have Glenn Ottaway and Dave Peck in the audience. And you know that scene in Lord of the Rings at the Battle of Helm's Deep? when Legolas looks over at Aragorn and he goes, "Your friends are with you, Aragorn," right? And so I was like, "Yeah, my friends are with me." And then I look out, I'm standing there behind the camera waiting to go out, and I'm like, they aren't even here. No one's helping me. This is garbage.
Wow.
Yeah, and then you're like...
And do you think it was it purely...
I'm not afraid of being on TV.
Right, no, but was it stage fright, do you think?
No, well, I've grown up, honestly, Glenn Ottaway made it way more stressful. I was so thrilled that Glenn came down, but Glenn is a magician from Toronto who not everybody probably knows, but I watched him since I was a kid and have been friends with him for a long time, and, you know, taught me a lot of things about how to perform, and so having him in the audience, I'm like, I don't really care if I let myself down or even the TV audience, but boy, if I suck and Glenn sees me die, that's awful.
Which is really neat, I think, on a whole lot of levels, but there was a sense of pride to this, really, almost.
Well, I have friendly pride, I've been in show business long enough not to have any ego left,
right?
But like
right.
At all. But yeah, I was like, I don't want Glenn to see me die because he, on his own dime, flew down there and took time out of his life to come and see an old friend perform. And people also have to realize it's not just a television spot. It's a television spot, but it's an American television show, and Canadians hardly ever get on American television. It's a big deal.
What about the peer thing? What about the fact that you're going to be going up against other magicians that
it's like golf. I'm only competing with myself, right? I'm not competing with the other acts. I don't care if they fool them. Truthfully, I didn't even really care if I fooled Penn and Teller.
Which you're not allowed to say anything about yet, right?
Contractually, I can say nothing until it airs.
Yeah, we're a couple weeks out from air date, which is, let's plug it now.
Yeah, August 17th, 8 p.m. on the CW network.
Right.
Fool us with me and who knows who else.
And you don't even know who else is on the show.
No.
They shoot
as modular. So the five people who are on my show, we could all be... Matter of fact, the guy who was on two positions after me was on the premiere. So they just cut us up and move us around.
Sure.
But yeah, backstage is, I mean, listen, it's the nicest, you saw the stage, nicest stage I've ever worked on.
Gorgeous theater.
Yep.
Gorgeous theater,
it's
gorgeous
beautiful,
stage.
But backstage is great. Hair and makeup were fantastic. It's, you know, it's unlike Canadian productions. There's a lot more money. You can tell. There's 9 cameras and a crane. When was the last time you saw that in Canada?
So a little bit of pride, no ego but pride, which I think is kind of interesting to me from a
what comes before the fall?
That's right. I think it's pride. Nice way to quote the Old Testament.
Do my best.
Yeah, I know you do. So, was there? I mean, is it stage fright? Penn and Teller fright?
So Penn and Teller are
going to be made to look like a fool.
Penn and Teller are 10 feet away from me.
Yeah, very
something
close.
Like that.
Yeah.
So it's weird because I've performed.
They're always whispering to each other.
Yeah, it's just this is the other. So the cameras are mildly distracting from my performance.
Yeah.
But having them talk amongst themselves, it's because you know, like normally if I'm in a theater and two people are talking, I'm going to stop and be like, hey.
Yeah,
put
you're
the
gonna,
phone.
You're gonna call
put
them
the
out.
Pokemon game down.
Yeah, sure, you're going to call them out.
But you know, their name happens to be on the theater. So I can't really say much. So yeah, it's weird. It freaks you out. But all the stress was just to do mostly with Glenn. And then, you know, so it's a performance, but you're also trying to, you cannot prognosticate likely events, right, with a show like that.
Sure.
You can try all you want. And so I tried to take the Zen approach of whatever's going to happen is going to happen. But then you walk out there and you're like, oh boy, here we go. You know, the host stole my opening line, if you remember.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt like I had a misstep. What had happened was during camera, I don't know if I told you this, during camera block, they try to figure out what my opening line is going to be in the rest of my performance. They can figure out how to shoot it. My opening line was going to be this. And then I walk out, and Allison Hannigan, the host of the show, says, "Ladies and gentlemen, joined by five people from the audience who he's never met before, Matt DiCero." And now I have 10 seconds to say something else.
So you mentioned earlier TV's manipulation, but it's also really artificial, right? Because I've seen that act. I've seen your act many times, too many times.
Yeah.
And I know the setup, and I know how it goes, and I know how you pull people out of the audience. You didn't get to do that here because it's all about economy of emotion and speed.
Well, and it's also about demographics. So I wanted... I wanted four females and one guy. Always is how that piece works. And I had asked for anything. I don't care as long as it's not a black guy at the end of this. At the end, as long as it's not a black man, because I don't want all the jokes centered around the black. And I have I have a joke about, name a bunch of the potential colors of their underwear. I go, brown is not a color, sir. And it would look hinky. And I've tried
and just
it.
For context, this is an effect about your
five people are on stage.
Defining the
color
of
people's underwear. Five people are on stage, and I figure out the color of their underwear. So, I don't want that. So I say, look, you guys pick whatever you want. And they go, well, we need an Asian person. We need a, they have demographics they have to appeal to. Matter of fact, I'm the last year for the show. Like they actually said if I was a year older, they probably wouldn't have had me on the show.
Interesting.
I walk out from around the camera and there's like a black guy at the end. And I'm like, you just killed three jokes and I'm not going to be rude enough.
So step on your lines. You got to, yeah.
Yeah, there's tons of missteps.
And so like, you're going in kind of not empty-handed, but you're not
fully loaded. The way it was. It's not the way it was in the camera block, certainly, and in the rehearsal. But at the same time, my job is to deal with whatever comes my way, and I like that, so I had to deal with it. Did it look from the audience like I was a mess?
No, not at all, no. And I think that's pretty classic, right, for any performer. I mean, I know I've been on stage
and
been
so nervous.
Well,
do you know what relaxed me? I'll tell you, I've not told a soul this, I don't think, but what really relaxed me was right before I walk out on stage, production is hanging with you, and they walk you out to your mark before you start the tape. And I'm standing behind the backstage right camera, and the camera operator is sitting in his chair eating a submarine sandwich. He's just eating a sandwich, waiting for them
just
to strike the stage.
Care.
Doesn't care. They're resetting the lights from the last act, and they're getting ready, and they're getting my mic set up, and he's just, hossing out on his sandwich.
Kind of levels the room, right?
Yeah, and I'm just like, oh, okay, here we are.
Yeah.
Welcome to IOTC.
Well, on one level, it's really high end, and it's stressful and all that, and then on another, you just kind of go, it's another show, right? And it's, I think...
However, it's another show that, if it looks like crap...
Yeah.
And that can be through, not even through my fault, I could be screwed over in editing, let's say. It never goes away. Especially in the age of the internet with YouTube, follow you around like a bad penny. There could be lasting damage from a bad spot. So yeah, I guess that's a little bit of stress.
Yeah, that's probably
But mostly Glenn Ottaway sitting in the audience. I really wanted to make sure, because imagine, so he came down specifically to see me. Imagine if I don't even know, I can't remember, but maybe I sucked, maybe I didn't. But if I really sucked.
And he was so great and so generous and... I mean, I was sitting with him.
Yeah, it would ruin his trip to go, because, the guy who comes down to see tape sucks. I mean, oh, my God, I can't have that. So, yeah, that was bad.
So what do you learn about doing magic on TV? I mean, I've always wondered about it myself.
Well, I had some interesting debates with production and the directors. They wanted to change my performance, and they wanted to change my trick a little bit. And what I've learned is, it's all artificial. Like, they're not particularly concerned about what you do. As long as it looks good on camera. So, 12 years of doing this trick with an ending that I've built up for a long, long time that's unique to me, and they just want to throw it away because they don't think it'll play well on TV. And I'm like, yeah, it will. It will. There's a live audience. I know, I can tell you this will kill. And they're back and forth, no, we don't think so. And I just go, yeah, this is bad news.
Yeah, there's other factors at play. I mean, what about the notion of misdirection, right? You're doing a card trick for a
Well, it's hard to
people.
Misdirect nine cameras and,
very
and a crane that's swooping in front of your face.
Plus,
right?
You've got an audience. Plus, you've got two people that are, got you under a microscope.
Yeah, and there is a bit of weirdness, too. Like, Penn, like a lot of us watch Penn & Teller since we were a kid. I used to watch Penn & Teller's Invisible Thread, the short, remember?
Right.
Sorry with the mic. Used to watch that all the time. And then you walk out and you see them, and Penn's lost 100 pounds.
My favorite scene from one of their, the film. I remember, I don't know why this, going through the the security check at the airport, and he rolls the ball.
That's hilarious. What is with this fascist machine?
Yeah, it's such a funny bit.
It's the best
bit,
thing. It's probably the best thing in the movie.
Yeah, it's such a great bit.
That was Penn and Teller getting killed.
That's right.
Yeah. So yeah, it's weird to see them out there.
Yeah, what do you mean?
You know, it's strange to.
Did you interact with them at all? I mean,
they wouldn't let us talk to them.
Interesting.
So at all because I can't see them.
This is like quiz show, man.
Yeah, it was funny. I kept thinking about quiz show too, right? Like, but there's no money. Like in quiz show, the audience is tuning in to follow the money.
It was a $64,000 question or something, wasn't
it? Yeah, that's the real life version of quiz show.
Yeah.
And then, but this, what are they? They're just tuning in. It's the closest.
You get the FU trophy.
Yeah, exactly. But you know what the cool thing is? This show is as close to like the Sullivan show as we've had.
Right.
There's never been another TV show that's had this many magicians on, uninterrupted for 7 minutes at a time, since Sullivan.
What do you think? It's huge.
What
do you think of the premise? The fact that here you are, I mean, kind of takes that mystery out of magic a little bit, doesn't it? You're setting the audience up just
but
like
everyone knows that the magic's not real. You think I'm Gandalf? Nobody thinks I'm going to go up and go, "You shall not pass."
That's right. Yeah.
Right, and slam my cane down. No, nobody. So the premise of Fool Us, you're referring to the effect.
Well, just kind of method that whole being puzzle. Everything. Like, here, I've got this puzzle. You guys need to figure it out. So the cat's kind of out of the bag, in a sense.
Well, in 2016, in the age of reality television, this is what you're up against, right? There has to be some sort of tension between the host and the people on the show, and that tension is in the form of a competition. They would never have got that show made if they said, look, we want five magicians a show to come up and perform. Never would have had that made.
I haven't heard a lot of criticism of it. Maybe there is some out there. Maybe there's writing out there. But there must be some, there's a group of magicians who think that the notion of setting you up
to
sort of to fail or to say, ha, I got you, is the wrong way to position.
But from the minute the producer said I would be on that show, when they finally booked me, I was like, yeah, I don't care about fooling them.
Right.
Because if the millions of people who are watching us are only concerned about whether I fool them or not, I'm not probably doing my job right. I just want to be entertaining.
Right.
Who cares if you fool them or not? You're on a national television show and you get to perform for 7 minutes. And people don't see this kind of stuff ever anymore. It's not like America's Got Talent. America's Got Talent, you only get 90 seconds.
Right.
Right? This is 7 minutes. People get to see people's fully developed routines and pieces from their act. It doesn't happen anymore. That is what makes it special.
Is there a sense, is that sort of why you lean more towards the comedy than the magic, would you say? That you just want, you know, you just mentioned, I don't really care, but I just want to be entertaining.
Oh, I mean, well, I lean more to the comedy than the magic because it's more sellable in this country.
And just because you weren't that talented, frankly.
No.
Wasn't it? Really?
Absolutely no talent. It's amazing how far I've got on very little talent. I didn't care about fooling Penn and Teller. The audience at home will be fooled by what I did. There's no way they're going to know how I did that thing. Because I know that from 12 years of doing it. Nobody ever figures it out. So, yeah, I'm confident the method will fool them unless they zoom in on certain
things. But on a certain level, you don't care about that anyway, right? You want them really to
I want them to laugh and be entertained.
Enjoy that 7 minutes with Matt DeCero kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
What's your tagline? Take the boredom out of the boardroom?
Take the boredom out of the boardroom. That's all I do is corporate work.
Speaking of cheap hustles or cheap, what is it? Dodges and cheap hustles?
Cheap dodge or hustle.
It's mattdecero.com. That's mattdisero.com.
Please book me for your conference or convention.
Yes, live to tape here face-to-face at the Q. Queensway.
Formerly Saint Hubert.
So why do you say you've been in show business long enough for there to be no ego left?
But show business beats you down, right? Because here's the weirdness of show business. So I just perform on an international show. That show airs all over the world in Las Vegas. I'm flown down, I'm treated like a star, I get this suite. And the next day, when I came home, I was home for a day, and then the next day, I performed at a military base bar. Like, you can, you know, just one day, you're playing the best place ever, and then the next day, you can be working in crap. It's the most humbling job ever, right? Because you could be anywhere.
And a few weeks after that, you were interviewing at the local dump, so...
And then I was interviewing at the local dump.
The causal chain.
Mysteriously connected. I see how the line of my career is pointing down.
Yeah.
Ah, well, what can you do?
But that's not, I mean, there's clearly something that, that holds you to it. It's not just that you
lack of experience or skill for anything else. All I know is show business. Like, you're asking if what's keeping me in show business?
Well, you could get the job at the dump, even though you have
pretty tough to support the wife and child on $15 an hour.
You have a blank space for a resume.
I got some room on it, there's no question.
So funny.
Yeah, my resume is 3 inches of type.
You still enjoy it, don't you?
I love everything about being on stage.
Right.
I hate everything about the business. Everything about the business is crap. I hate negotiating contracts and money, but this is what agents are for, and I happen to have a good one, so that works out.
So to be a successful act, do you have to do a little bit of everything, basically?
I disagree with that. Like, the people who go, you got to do birthday parties, you got to do libraries, you got to do adult shows, blah, blah, blah. I think the more you specialize, the better. The only reason I've survived this long is because I only do corporate. I only do one thing really, really well. And that's it. I don't do close-up magic. I don't do kids' parties. I don't do any of that nonsense. If you don't specialize, you're in big trouble.
What about the business side? You're at a point now in your career where you've got an agent, you've got somebody you trust, you work well with, et cetera, and so on. A lot of guys don't have that. A lot of acts wouldn't
almost
have
no
that.
One
musicians,
has that.
Magicians, name it. Name a variety act that...
lots of them don't
pretty
have
rare,
it.
Pretty rare, isn't it?
You need someone to guide your career a little bit, too. You need someone to go, you should take this show. No, you shouldn't take this TV show. Or,
a mentor, like a Glenn Ottaway, you have in your life or had in your life, but people like that to come alongside.
You need a business mentor, and you need a performing mentor, too, right? Like, you need a Glenn Ottaway or Herb Morrissey or something. You need somebody to, go, this is where you need to go. Otherwise... the thing is, too, people assume show business is like what they see on television, which is American show business, and Canada has no star system to speak of. Canada doesn't have anything like that, right? So you're paddling against the river in Canada. You got to get out. This is why American television is such a big deal. It's important to be on it, because once you're recognized as being good in America, then Canada somehow accepts
it. And is that the hope, too, with the Penn and Teller stuff, that it could be a stepping stone to another... piece or another?
It might be a stepping stone to another TV show, but I don't know if it'll mean much in the end. It's tough to say. The network is small, but it might get me stuff overseas. It'll be a lovely piece of tape.
Yeah, sure.
I really wanted to perform on their show.
What
did you think of the overall? What was your sense of the whole show?
So hard for me, because the whole thing was just such a spectacle, right? From being kind of behind the camera in a couple settings, sort of almost feeling like I was acting as your consultant. No, you need to do that again there, Matt. That was, and then one of the guys asking me questions about what, questions.
During the, they shot the B-roll
the
interview, for my interview.
The B-roll was awesome. It was fun. But whoa, what a surreal experience. And then to go from that out to Vegas at night to the
walking
show,
around
the
Caesar, isn't
it? Just so weird, right? The whole thing was pretty surreal. I was thrilled to be there on a friendly level. Honestly, there's a sense of, I think, accomplishment, certainly from my perspective. And I think that's what I meant about being a little nervous in the audience, and I think Glenn felt the same, right?
Glenn leaned over to me once and said, this is while we were still in Vegas, and he goes, I was actually a little jealous of you being up on stage.
Interesting.
And I was like, that's kind of cool.
It is kind of cool.
You wouldn't hear that from Glenn, so if Glenn's listening, I'm sorry, I tipped the work on that. But, I guess it also meant that he was not unhappy with my set, which is good.
No, he was thrilled to be there as well, and I think there's something kind of cool about that Canadian contingent that was there, and the camaraderie community, and so on.
Yeah, there was a few Canadians. They're one of the magic consultants.
Keep watching
Canadian
the show. You'll see who's coming up for the listeners out there. But there was, six Canadians this season? Maybe?
Yeah, more than any other season.
Yeah, interesting.
I think in the past 3 years, there's only been 2 Canadians or something like that, and so, I just found out.
So if it is a stepping stone... What's the Hope So stepping stone? Is it the Tonight Show? Is it a sitcom?
I just showcased for the Tonight Show in Los Angeles, so there's a good chance I'll get that. But you know what's funny? The guy who books the Tonight Show, or one of the people who books the Tonight Show now, actually said to me, because I said, it'd be nice, maybe you end up becoming famous. I made some crack about being famous from performing on the Tonight Show, and it was sarcastic because I knew it's not true. But he leans over to me and he goes, just so you know, you could do all 4 major network talk shows in 1 year and still people wouldn't know your name. It's not like the days when Carson had it.
Right.
So when you ask what the next stepping stone is...
Well, there's just so much out there, right?
Yeah, there's a sea of channels with a sea of things on it. You're lost in a sea of information, right? So what's the next stepping stone? Don't know. I just want to keep working. I really just,
You just want to make a living.
I just want to make a living doing the things I like to do. But I don't need a sitcom. I don't need to be in movies. I want to perform live. But it's hard to get people out to perform live, and there's all these, these problems. It's a depressing interview for anybody who wants to get into show business.
It's about residual
income, isn't it? But there are realities. I said on this CBC interview the other day, they were asking about my son, and I'm like, yeah, I don't want him to be in show business.
Yeah.
There's no way. It's a horrible, stressful. In Canada, the chances are low, man.
So what is it about? Is it the lack of sustainability for you that makes you crazy? The not knowing what's next. And that's kind of like
that's anybody's
small
job.
Business owner, right?
Yeah, it's anybody's job. You could be shut down tomorrow, but it's worse in Canada because you can't even. There's no star system.
And things have changed, haven't they? I mean,
in Canada?
Well, just from a show business perspective. Weren't you working a lot more 20 or 15 years ago?
I was working a lot more before 2008, before the recession. The recession changed everything. 9/11 changed things, and then
SARS changed things.
Yeah, actually, since I've been out of high school, I was thinking about this. So I graduated in the early
90s. Okay, if anyone doesn't want to be uplifted, now's the time to stay
but
tuned.
But here's the reality. So I graduated in the early 90s after a crippling recession of the early 90s, which was worse than 2008. So it went crippling recession, dot-com breaks. Remember that bubble bursting in the late 90s? Then 9/11, then SARS, then another crippling recession. It hasn't exactly, the tone of the economy hasn't exactly built, right? So, yeah, it's difficult to go, I know what's going to happen next. Economists don't know what's going to happen next. So the nature of my work is all corporate. Companies don't know what the heck's going to happen, right? So how can I possibly prepare?
What about, we'll wrap it up here in a few minutes.
We should probably re-record this.
Live at the queue. Talk about the future of your own, your hope-so future in comedy, but what about comedy as general? I mean, is the future more the Jerry Seinfeld approach of releasing something on the web? I read an article recently in The Hollywood Reporter that talked about how Amazon Prime and Netflix is just changing everything from a Hollywood perspective because the studios are just not throwing the money at things like they used to.
Well, they don't need to throw the money anymore.
Changing,
you can make
right?
it yourself. But you still have... So everyone always parrots the same thing, right? Louis C.K. makes his own DVD, sells it for $5 on his own website, and he generates $800,000 in sales.
Wow.
But you have to have a fan base
You've
to
have
do
a,
that.
It's like crowdfunding, right? You've got
to
have a
But the only
crowd
way to get that fan base is to be on television with consistency. Mm. Same with Patton Oswalt. For all the stuff that people say about Patton, look, he was on a network sitcom that developed his fan base. It's hard now. Matt, how do you separate yourself? Everybody's got a podcast. Sorry.
Yep.
But
it's true. They're all
everybody
lower.
Has a podcast. How do you separate your podcast from everyone else's? How do you, and it's the internet. Every year I get older, there's somebody else coming up who understands the internet far more than I do. So the internet's changed everything. I don't know if it's necessarily for the better. I really don't. It's just
still too early to tell.
Fran Lebowitz says, Fran Lebowitz, the author, she always says the volume of the Vox Populi should not be turned up too loud.
Mm.
And it's kind of true. Don't need to hear the voice of all of these acts. For Carson, there was one guy who was like the gatekeeper, and he decided, at least there was somebody making decisions about who should be seen and who should not be seen.
Right.
Now it's everybody.
Just reminded me of that Monty Python skit. This is your first lesson in how not to be seen.
Yes.
Not stand up.
But I heard a great thing on the radio the other day. You'll appreciate this. This guy goes, with regard to art, there's no point in trying to decide whether something's good or bad anymore because there's an audience for everything now, and it can be found. So to label something as good or bad art, completely useless, because if your thing is standing there with your finger in your butt while you paint, there's an audience for that.
Right.
There's literally an audience for everything. So
it's a good point. Who said that?
Some guy on the radio show. I just caught the end of it, but I was like, oh, what a great quote.
It's kind of true, eh? I mean, that is the Facebook Twitter age.
I was at the MoMA once, in Manhattan, and I'm walking through that museum. There's a doorway. And there's a naked man and a naked woman. And to get into this art exhibit, you have to go through these people. And I have to decide if it's like my crotch to their crotch or my ass to their crotch, You got to make this decision about... And I'm like, this is art now? I guess it is.
I think I worked a cruise like that once in the Toronto Harbor.
Yeah, it's so weird. So yeah,
remember
we'll
those
see
days?
Where... Oh yeah, I remember those. I didn't care for them.
So tell me a little bit. You've talked a little bit, and we'll wrap it up, but... from TV to TV. You're talking about a game show, I think. You're sort of
in an effort to find an exit strategy,
and maybe consistency on TV and income and so on. Maybe.
Yeah, I'm working with another entertainer, another comic about a game show. Working on a game show, trying to get that off the ground. But again, there's a game show channel with a million game shows, and it's hard to find funding for all these. It's hard to launch anything from Canada, so you have to be in the States, but if you live in Canada, then it's hard to get down to America. Yeah, there's a lot of negativity in this, I just realized. In this particular interview, there's not a lot of hope, but that's the reality of it. What to do, right? The game show might take off or it might not, but at least I feel like you always got to be pitching, right? You always got to be at least doing something.
You do have to be dropping the pebbles in the pond, man. You got to be all doing the time. Something, right?
But at some point, you start to get scoliosis in your back from holding all the pebbles, and you're like, I can't keep throwing these fucking pebbles anymore because I'm tired.
Just go with the hope metaphor.
I always say the countless relentless hustle is what kills me in show business. Mm. It's just, after 25 years, you would think I wouldn't have to hustle so much. And in fact, I have to hustle more.
And there's some insight there, right? I think there's insight there for a lot of different people, small business owners and so on, but also for people who are getting into the business, right?
Of show business?
You've got to be good at a few things. Not that you need to do the kid shows and so on, but you got to have the business side. At least, like you say, somebody coming alongside.
You need to be net savvy. But all these things, so I don't care how net savvy you are, I don't care how much money you have, if you come from millions of dollars, like some people we know, if you don't have an act, it's useless. You know, you can pull every lever to get you onto the Tonight Show, but if you don't bring the goods at the end of the day, you're in big trouble. So you still better get out there and work. And a lot of acts today don't seem to care so much about the work anymore. Nobody wants to go and perform.
That's the guy going to mop the floor, by the way, I think.
He actually just saw my act, and he's cleaning it up right now.
Yes, the tears.
A lot of people, wouldn't you say that? Don't you think a lot of magicians are more concerned with just selling some trick and getting it public? They don't care about performing
anymore. That's a whole other market in itself, right? And I think, to your point earlier, there's an audience for everything, in a sense, right? So it's, that's...
Tragic.
And maybe that's, sort of the way forward in some respects. Finding that online audience, whatever that means.
Yeah, and then nobody knows how to monetize that now either, right? So
has Seinfeld, so let's wrap with this. So has Seinfeld been successful with, I can't remember the name of it, Comedians
and Cars Getting Caught? Because he had an audience from the Seinfeld show. Right. There's a groundbreaking
Could somebody else
show.
Have done that?
I don't think so.
Interesting.
Name another comedian who could have instantly put something on the web and drawn in 500,000 viewers. Right out of the gate Acura as a sponsor right away and got those kind of guests right away, right?
Yeah.
Like if I did that, say it was my idea, you and five of our friends would be watching us do
it. And maybe in 5 years you would have that audience, maybe, if you'd stuck with it and committed
to it. Even Mark Maron, who has arguably the most popular podcast on the net right now, I mean, it took him, 2-3 years of just working in his garage doing interviews and being broke. Tough to do that when you got a kid.
It's hard, yeah.
yeah, there's not a lot of... I don't know what's going to happen, but that's partially what makes it kind of fun, right?
So did you fool Penn & Teller?
Not allowed to say.
Oh, come on.
No, can't say.
You're contractually obligated
I'm
not
contractually
to.
Obligated not to say, but I can say with some confidence that Canada will be impressed.
That's
when
funny.
They watch the B-roll, they'll be impressed. As long as Glenn Ottaway is impressed. Glenn, that's all I care about.
Comedy Magic with Matthew DiStero, clearly and consistently taking boredom out of the boardroom.
Always.
That's mattdistero.com. Thanks for joining us today.
Indeed. Thank you, Brad.